Welcome to Humming Fools, a fortnightly podcast and amateur auditory guide hosted by nobodies and dedicated to the artists, dreamers, or anyone out there with the creative urge. I am one of your nobodies, Kyle Stuke, and I'm joined by my co-host, Noah Bosley. Noah, how are you?
Nice. I'm good.
Yeah?
Yeah, doing well.
Nice.
It's funny, we just got done talking about how things aren't going well.
Yeah, so don't lie to our audience.
No, but just overall, I think they're good.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Way to keep it positive.
Yeah.
I am tired. I'm sleepy. Today was a bit rough, but we're here now and we're going to be, it's very reminiscent of what this episode is. We're going to be talking about the good. We're going to be talking about the bad and, I was going to give a burn, but I don't want to be negative. So we're not going to talk about the ugly. But yes, this is the best of list and the worst of. So it's the 2019 recap.
We did one last year and this is for 2019.
Yeah. So Noah, let's just like start off with the, again, if you didn't listen to the 2018 one, basically we talk about all the art and content that we enjoyed from the year, movies, television, books, music, games potentially. And then after that, we kind of talk about personal experiences and professional experiences, the good and the bad.
Yes.
So do you want to start off with movies, my good friend?
Okay, movies. Actually, you start because you have them in front of you. I'm still pulling them out.
No, Noah. I like set up the bit perfectly to where I could say, hey, you want to start off with movies and then you would do movies and then afterwards I would leave.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Get out of it. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Fine. I'll go first. I got you. Reverse psychology. I wanted to go first. I'm powerful.
No, dang it. Now I want to go.
The audience is like, I'm leaving.
Yeah,
this episode's the worst of 2020. okay, for movies for me, I'm just going to list them all and then we can talk about them a little bit. I have Joker, which was my number one film of 2019. I loved it. I had a bad attitude about when it was announced. I didn't want it and it really surprised me, which is the case with a lot of movies that I've grown to love. Two quick examples, Chronicle, went into that movie ready to hate it. And then I was like, oh, this is good. And then same with Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, interesting.
When I saw that trailer, I was like, that's dumb. And I watched it. And then I was like, when that monkey screamed no, I got chills. Anyway.
Yeah, especially because he wasn't a monkey.
Are apes not considered monkeys?
Monkeys have tails.
Ah.
Well, that's not the one thing that sets them apart, but that's how you can tell easily is monkeys have tails.
Okay, so there's monkeys and then apes, mark? Okay, and they're both primates.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm learning. Yeah. We're growing.
That's right.
This is my favorite moment of 2020, and this will show up on the podcast year. So we have Joker, Little Women, Ad Astra, and Zombieland 2 Double Tap. Little Women was just so pleasant.
So, okay, I have a question because that one's also on my list.
Little Women?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But neither of us watched it
together
in 2019.
That's true.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay, so this is the weird thing about this list, y'all.
Right.
Is that it fits two categories. Either the content can be from 2019 or it can just be something that you experienced in 2019.
Either or. Okay, that makes sense.
So there's going to be some things on this list.
Great.
I'm glad that you clarified that. We did it last year, but it's good to clarify it this year too. There's some things on this list that Noah and I experienced that we consumed that was not made in 2019. But we experienced for the first time and enjoyed it. Other things are pieces of art that were specifically made or released in 2019 that we enjoyed. So Noah is correct. Neither of us watched Little Women in 2019, but it is a 2019 film. And that's why I put it on the list. But
nice.
Thank you for clarifying
that. Cool, cool, cool.
Little Women.
The reason I brought it up because I was sad that I couldn't include it.
Oh, okay. You can.
Okay.
I am judge, jury, and executioner, but in like a good way.
Okay.
An executioner of justice.
Ah.
Yeah, Little Women. Again, just very sweet, great music, great cinematography. Really made me choke up. I saw it with three dudes, and I thought that was pretty magical. Mm. And I connected with a stranger next to me. Yes. She was like underneath a quilt. We didn't see each other's faces. I think she was older than 60, but I really felt like I knew her. Next was a surprising... It's always fun when I disagree with people. When I see a movie... Now, let me elaborate. When no, I see a don't. Movie that everyone says is bad, and then I watch it and I go, I really like that. Mm. And that was Ad Astra with Brad Pitt. No one was really that fond of this movie. Mm. It kind of came and went with a little whisper.
Yeah.
But it was really good. Solid sci-fi flick with an emotional story and some great action set pieces and moments of horror. Mm. Again, Noah, I hope you check it out because you're a space boy.
Yes.
But there's a great sequence on the moon with like two little moon racers, pods. What do you call them?
Pod racers.
Yeah. You know, Anakin. Are you familiar with this classic the War of space the films? Stars, yeah. The War of the Stars. Anyway, a moon, like, I'm just going to call it a moon four-wheeler. And it's like all the...
It's like sound. A fancy moon buggy.
Yeah, moon buggy. Thank you. But buggy is what I was looking for. Mm. And there's like this chase on the moon and the sound design and how the gravity affects everything. It's so cool. Mm. And then just for Zombieland, the first one was a very, not important film, but like impactful for me. Because that was like, while I was, as a kid, kind of getting to see more and more zombie films and fall in love with the genre and... to see it again in a comedic way like Shaun of the Dead was just so fun.
Yeah.
And it was also kind of one of those like R-rated movies that I watched that I don't think I was supposed to. Sorry, Mom. But
because we were like 14.
Yeah.
When it came out.
Yeah,
like pretty 2009-ish.
Young. Yeah. So this one, I just was, it's nice to see a sequel just really do right by the original. And so there's a lot of great callback jokes, but they also create new stuff. Mm. And there's a couple moments where I just was like impressed with even the world building. And I was like, I wish that like a drama would do this with zombies. And so it was very pleasant. And so it just made me happy. It reminded me of a simpler time. And it was nice to see, like, it was like 10 years-ish later.
Yeah.
And we got a really solid movie.
Nice.
Tell me about your list, babe.
All right. Well, since I can include it, my favorite was Little Women.
Okay.
Yes. it was so good. And it's funny because I like was not familiar at all with either source materials, the movie. Like
Material
Eye. Yeah. Yes. The original movie or the book. Just by name, I knew of it, but and now I almost don't want to see the original movie or read the book. Mm. I'm like, it's so good.
Yeah.
It was so endearing. I thought that the acting was great. The characters are great. The writing was super fresh, which I know it was slightly updated.
Yeah, there were some things that were
For kind of the modern world, I guess, from what I've read, which makes sense as to why it felt like really current.
Yeah, like the scene where the daughter's like playing the piano and then the mom's like, daughter, that song slaps. I was like, I'm glad that like there's like a modern take, like, you know, added, because otherwise as a viewer I would have been lost as what the scene was trying to tell me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That was actually my favorite scene. The acting was great. Yeah, some just really good performances. Cinematography was amazing. Mm-hmm. Costume design—it just it hit all the marks. And then, it's just such a feel-good movie. Even though, you know, there's some parts that are like super hard. You know, it's like it's just like a great tragedy in it. But it just felt very wholesome overall.
Yeah. Can I add one quick thing?
No.
Okay.
What?
Oh, thank you. I hope I don't find this opinion offensive, but maybe it is. So feel free to correct me. But I get tired of films being like men and women are exactly the same or men and women are so different.
Sure.
And so it's fun to see a movie that is like, listen, women deal with a lot of the same struggles. So when you watch this film, it's centered on these, you know, four daughters and sisters.
Yeah.
And it's cool to see, it's like, if these were four boys, it'd be a lot of the same struggles of love and trying to find work and what's your purpose. But then it is also cool that the film's like, this also is, it's during a specific context and time. And so they have different struggles than men.
Right.
And showing those struggles. And then also, though, celebrating what's unique about being a woman. And again, like, there's stereotypes and not everyone fits underneath those, and that's fine. But I thought it's cool that a movie can be like, listen, women are brave and they do all these cool things, but then it's also, they can cry when they cut their hair.
Yes.
And so I kind of get tired of like when movies or things kind of like, no, women have to be tough like men.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or women have to be like super feminine, whatever. And I think it was cool to be like, listen, they are just as vast and complex as men, but the things that make that are stereotypical can be good, too.
Yeah.
So anyway, I found the film encouraging that way of being like, none of these things are bad,
right? No, absolutely, and it felt validating that, you know, it was mostly women that were involved in making this because it's like, oh, well, it must be, you know, authentic, to an extent, and. Yeah, that was so refreshing to me to just be like, oh no, this is totally, you know, this is a, you know, a stereotype or whatever, like a gender norm, but it's also fully embraced by many women and that's where they feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, there are problems that are very unique to women, especially at that time.
Yeah.
That they couldn't talk about. And I just thought, the kind of cathartic moments and stuff like that were just really well handled.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of the breaking points. That was my favorite. I really enjoyed Joker.
Nice.
I didn't know how I would feel going into it. I didn't have any expectations. I thought it was a very good drama. I don't know. I haven't made up my mind as to how it sits in that universe for me, just in the world
Batman,
of Batman,
DC,
which there's no reason that the Joker should just be in Batman's world.
Yeah,
obviously that was kind of the point of this iteration of it, was like, oh, this is its own thing, which I appreciated. I was very happy that Joaquin Phoenix reminded everyone that he's one of the most amazing actors out there.
Yeah.
I was sad that he wasn't very, you know, in the spotlight in the last few years. So that was just a cool way for him to make his comeback. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, loved it. I love just the Tarantino style of directing. I loved all the acting. I loved the bromance.
Oh yeah.
Between Brad Pitt and
it was strong.
And Leo. And it was strong. And it was just like so much of it was unspoken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they were just like, you could tell that they had each other's back. It was a little bit one-sided in that sense where one of them was really supporting the other.
Yeah.
And they say that like right at the beginning of the movie, because they say, and you know, they're being interviewed and then he asks the stuntman, Brad Pitt, he's like, so, you know, carrying his load.
Yeah.
which is like what he does professionally and, you know, in life, just like always looking out for him. And so I thought that was like a surprisingly sweet touch to the story that I didn't expect. I like the pacing, Tarantino's pacing, and just he lets things linger. The movie shots within the movie when the characters acting were really cool, and they would just play out entire scenes. It wasn't like always interrupted by something or like the camera didn't like go out of it. You know, it was just like, oh no, this is what people are going to see if they see this movie.
Yeah.
So anyway, I thought that was really good. Really enjoyed Parasite.
Nice, yes.
I thought that was really fun, really very different from anything that you see coming out of the U.S. It's a Korean film. Yeah, we talked about this during and afterwards, but because we saw it together, but like the scary moments. It wasn't really a horror movie.
No.
It was like a, slightly a thriller, especially the second half or the second act. But the scary moments were like scarier than any horror movie that we've seen recently.
I was like, Blumhouse, look at this 5-second clip.
Yeah.
Most of your catalog is not as good as
this. Yeah. And it's just like... And maybe that's why. It's because you don't expect it to be that frightening in that. And, you know, in another context, if you, you know, were expecting those shots constantly, then maybe it wouldn't have been as effective. But I thought it did that really well. Gets a little crazy at the end.
Yeah.
And we talked about that too, the way it wraps up. But maybe it could have been different. But overall, I thought it was just a really fresh movie. I'm seeing here that Endgame came out in 2019, which I did not realize that.
2019's been a long year.
Yeah, like it feels like it was 2 years ago. Like it doesn't feel like it came out anywhere near any of these other movies.
No, it doesn't.
Which I granted is probably like half a year in between, but Endgame was really good, but I'm not going to talk about it. I just it just doesn't feel like it counts.
People will like mention, like when I've talked to people about that, they've been like, what about Endgame? Because they know I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
And then I'm just kind of like, I liked it, but it didn't like, and it made me emotional. And I think it's a great ending, but it also just, it didn't, I don't really think about that much. If I'm being honest, like I think about Spider-Man 2 more than I think about Endgame. And I'm totally not trying to compare them. I just, that's how it's like, there's things that stick with me.
No, but you had to talk about Spider-Man, so yeah.
Well, of course. Speaking of, okay, something really funny happened.
Yes.
What was I watching? Oh, I was watching a Colombian film called Monos because I was trying to make my best of list. Which, so you saw the list of all the films I needed to watch before I could do that. And there's a part where they have this American woman hostage and they're like asking her questions. And I guess it's code or they're trying to like prove that it's her to her, like to the US trying to get her back or whatever. And so they ask her on the radio, they're like, who is the best superhero? And this is like a dramatic, like child soldier film. And it's like, who is like over the radio, who is the best superhero? And she leans forward and she's like, Spider-Man is the best superhero. And I just was like,
what?
Dang straight, but also what? I was like, does she like Spider-Man? And that's why, like,
or does she think that that's the correct answer?
Yeah,
or,
it was so weird, but I felt like I psychologically willed it because as soon as asked, I was like, well, that's obvious.
It's obviously Spider-Man.
And so, anyway, she said it. Anyway, Endgame, yes. It came out 2019. It doesn't feel like it, like you said.
Yeah. Which. If we're doing this, you know, closer to me having seen it, it would probably be in my top five, which I feel like I talked about it before.
You did, yeah.
On the show and said that it was one of my favorites. I'm happy with that list up to that point.
You should be.
I don't remember if I watched anything that didn't come out this past year that I was just watching for the first time. Yeah, I'm happy with that list.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I think the viewers will be too. let's move on to television. I think you'll agree with all of these. Maybe not. Ooh. I'm not sure if you've seen one of them, but I have Righteous Gemstones.
Ah, yes.
Good. HBO show and I feel bad that I'm blanking. What's the creator's and main actor's name?
Danny McBride.
Show just about a very rich. I'm not sure if they're Baptist, but basically, like,
that's what it's making fun of. It's just like the
mega church,
ultra wealthy mega church Baptist leaders, basically, who are just like drowning in wealth.
Yeah,
and. there's like the faith element is really real to them.
Mm-hmm.
And which I found interesting that,
yeah.
that they really, I mean, you could tell that he studied mega churches or went to them or
yeah.
been around people who attended or were part of them. But I expected it to take the turn of, oh, these people are putting on the faith part just in church, and then outside of it, they're just like despicable.
Yeah.
Which it ended up being a lot more nuanced than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pleasantly surprised because Danny McBride's brand of humor, I think when he's like plays a supporting role is has been pretty one dimensional.
Yeah.
Like he just plays himself pretty much.
Yeah.
But as a writer and a showrunner, I was very impressed with him.
Mm-hmm.
And just the amount of emotion he can pack into a show that you think is just going to be kind of silly humor.
Yeah.
I was very, very surprised.
I forget if this is you or someone else. I've been, I'm going to use the example. Do you watch Schitt's Creek?
Yes.
Okay. So I am trying to give Schitt's Creek a chance.
Yes.
I didn't love the first season. But I admit there's parts that are funny, but that's why I like Righteous Gemstones, because I feel like Schitt's Creek does what I don't like in comedy, which is where characters are just mean or ridiculous to an unrealistic point, and then they don't like change. And I'm not talking about the main cast, because that's
sure.
the whole point of
sure,
Schitt's Creek
sure.
is watching the main cast change and become better.
But yeah.
So what I really like about Righteous Gemstones is that characters can do and say ridiculous things, but then like they'll get called out on it or see that it's insane.
Yeah.
And then they'll like question it or talk about it. And like you said, McBride in the past has just kind of been that angry, mean redneck in stuff. And it's kind of one note. And so when I watched his two shows, one being Righteous Gemstones, there are Vice Principals, I kind of, the first episode, you're like, okay, these are who these characters are.
Yeah.
It's over the top.
Yeah.
But then it's cool to see them like, before the finale, change and apologize and grow. And so that's like comedy to me. Is funnier when there's a glimmer of story in it and there's progress made as opposed to and the specific example in Schitt's Creek, maybe he'll change, but it's the mayor who just constantly is unrealistically stupid and gross. And I'm like, this isn't funny. It's just grating.
Yeah.
Again, I know a lot of people like that show. I'm not trying to poop on it, but it helped me kind of realize what I don't like about certain comedies, because I can't connect with it because it's taking me out of it. Because I'm going, no one would do that. Whereas in Righteous Gemstones, I'm like, oh, there's people who are very hypocritical.
Yeah.
But then it's cool that they still can be buttholes and hypocrites, but then also be clinging to their faith, praying in private. So anyway, I'm glad that you also really liked Righteous Gemstones.
Yeah.
Next one that I know you agree with me on too is Amazon's Modern Love.
Yes, that's on my list.
Nice.
Yeah.
Modern Love was just a nice little limited series. Maybe they'll bring it back, but I guess it was based on, was it the New Yorker or New York Times articles on?
I think it's the New Yorker.
Okay.
And people would send in letters telling their love story, basically. And then the show took their favorite ones, I guess, whoever ran the show, and then made an episode for each story.
Yeah.
Very just good.
Very, very sweet. Well shot, good actors, and then
a lot of big names. Mm-hmm. Like you'll recognize everyone. Like,
Tina Fey.
The main character, yeah.
That's the only name I can think of. I was like, don't list names. But I was like, oh, well, Tina Fey.
Yeah.
And then nothing and then else
that's
came.
It, yeah.
Yes, lots of big names. And again, the thing that Noah and I really liked is the writing felt very realistic, to where the conversations that characters have. With romance, it's easy to get into unrealistic, you know, campy, just dramatic territory. And here it's like there's lots of drama because these are dramatic stories, but the way characters talk and deal with stuff is felt realistic and charming.
And that was part of the kind of like the levity and the humor was from just people talking like normal people. even if what they were mm-hmm. saying wasn't funny, you're like, oh my gosh, like I totally say that. Or like, mm-hmm. that's exactly how people talk.
Yeah.
And then there's humor just in that and just being accurate. And I thought it did a really good job with that.
Yeah. I hope they do more.
Yeah, me too.
If there's more articles or letters, I guess. Mm. The next I have, which I think you'll agree with too, maybe, is Love, Death, and Robots.
I thought that's what you were going to say.
Noah and I are connected.
Yep.
And then Love, Death, and Robots is kind of similar to where it was on Netflix, and it's just a series of unconnected shorts that are animated, and like the title says, they have love, mm-hmm. death, and robots in them.
Yep.
And it was just, it's fun to mix up how you consume stories, because like we get so caught up now in kind of the Netflix model where you just binge this one story and it's shot one way, or you watch movies. And so it was cool to watch a series that has all these crazy concepts that are then finished in 15 to like 20 minutes.
They're 10 minutes each.
I think some are longer than 10.
Really?
I thought so.
Mm.
But we don't need to.
I mean, it's not up to what you think, though.
It's not
there are a certain length.
There are some that are 10, though. So I'll meet you there.
They're pretty short.
Yeah. And they're just cool. I mean, the one thing that I don't like about them is how horny they are.
they're pretty. That's the love part. Yeah.
Yes. There's a lot of nakedness.
Yes.
And it's unnecessary. And that annoys me in media.
Yeah.
I celebrate sex. It's a wonderful thing. We shouldn't be ashamed of it. We should talk about it more.
Yeah.
It's natural. But I do somewhat turn my chin up to just plain debauchery. That's just me, though.
Yeah,
that's just me.
Right.
You do you. But there's just, again, some of the styles were so cool.
Oh, yeah.
And there's different animation for each.
Well, because all the episodes were so short and a different studio worked on each episode, it was a different team. They packed so much production value into that amount of time because it's like, the budget was condensed into, 10 minutes, 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So they made stuff that's just so impressive to look at, like more impressive than a lot of the blockbusters that come out.
Yeah.
And because they were short and there were multiple, like you said, they could have crazy ideas. And it didn't really matter if one of them kind of fell short for some people, because then it would be made up in another one. And there was a little bit of something for everyone in each episode. And everyone probably has a different favorite episode. And so the variety of styles was really cool. Variety of stories. Some of them were really clever. Some of them were really sweet. It was very good.
Some of them were horrifying.
Yeah.
There's one that ends and it like freaked me out. I just was like, oh, like just the implications just were so terrible.
Yeah.
Which then means I liked it because
I
like that stuff.
Exactly.
Super fun. I'd recommend, again, be warned. Some of them are very bloody and sexual.
It's definitely not. It's pretty adult.
And even the ones that are cute are kind of adult.
Also, this is like a weird tidbit.
Oh,
but,
do it.
The episodes are in a different order for everyone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if I were to say, oh, well, like, I love the first episode, it would be a different episode for you.
Okay. That's clever.
Which I thought was kind of cool. It like kind of jumbled it up. And yeah, I guess they're probably gathering data based on that. But, it's just kind of cool.
Well, now that the title's not accurate, it should be Love, Death, Robots, and Randomness. Like, I don't think it's fair.
That's right.
They should just let us know what we're getting into.
I don't know if it's different for every single person, but I know that different people have gotten different orders for the episodes.
Okay.
Which I thought was kind of a fun thing.
Yeah. And then my last one that I have is Barry, which I don't know if the latest season came out in 2019, but that's a show that I binged both. I think there's two seasons in total right now.
Yeah.
They're doing a third one. But I binged the two seasons and really, really liked it. I didn't expect it to be as dark as it is. It was kind of pitched to me more as a comedy.
Yeah.
And the trailers as well, but it gets dark.
Yeah.
But it's very funny at the same time while it's dark. And who's Bill Hader?
Hader.
Bill Hader is just like a powerhouse.
Oh, yeah.
He's just so good. and the supporting cast is really good. It's always fun to like meet new actors who are just good.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes you get like supporting cast, you're like, oh, they're fine. They're yeah. doing their job.
Yeah.
But it's really fun to be like, I've never seen this person before and she's amazing.
Mm.
And so, the second season has an episode that is probably one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. I just was so impressed by it. And it was directed by Bill Hader.
Mm.
And it's just one of those kind of bottle episodes where it doesn't really affect the rest of the show.
Yeah.
And you can just tell there's so much passion about it or behind it. So anyway, that's it for me, Noah. Tell me about your television. Nice. I know we had some crossover.
Yeah. But. I'll start with those. Get them out of the way. Righteous Gemstones, definitely up there. And I'll bundle that with Vice Principals.
Do it.
Which I also watched. I watched right after Righteous Gemstones because I was in a Danny McBride mood. And you know, I was equally surprised by that one. It was not what I thought it was going to be. So those are really good. And then Modern Love was one of mine. Just really fun. Love, Death, and Robots was one of mine. Schitt's Creek was one of mine.
I'm sorry.
It was fine.
Okay, cool.
Because, well, I really like the show, but it's also really hard for me and Julia to find a show that we want to watch together at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of them. And it's kind of been our show since.
Aww.
And so that's been really fun. Let's see. Sex Education is okay. a show of them.
I'm going to have to do it.
What?
Oh, no, I just, that was one where I watched the trailer and I rolled my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And have since seen it on lots of people's lists and yeah. heard about it. So I'm like, okay.
Oh, gotcha,
like,
gotcha.
You saying it is the nail in the coffin. Gotcha, I got to gotcha. Check it out.
A lot of heart in mm-hmm. that show, which I was not expecting. It's pretty raunchy. It's, you know, a teen drama. But I like the setting of it. You know, it's in England. Which already deviates from, you know, typical teen dramas that we get here.
Yeah.
Being American. So the school is structured very differently and all that stuff. But the characters are very, very interesting. And I was telling Julia, cause she started watching it and really likes it. But, I was saying if there's a character at any point that you're like, if I had to pick one character that seems one dimensional, it'd be this character. That means that the show just hasn't gotten to them yet.
Mm.
Because just the way they weave the plot lines and the character growth and everything, it's just very good. And they're not afraid to make their main characters look really bad.
Mm.
And just like, hey, this is an ugly side of them, and you're not gonna like it.
No.
And it's not gonna be it's not gonna be endearing. You're still gonna love them because of what makes them good, but this is just not gonna be a fun time. And so it just everyone has a lot of nuance and depth to them. So I've really been enjoying that.
Mm.
Let's see what else. It's hard to think back because, like, that's the most recent one for me. But there was definitely a few months towards the end of last year where it's just like got so busy I just couldn't watch anything. So
yeah.
A lot of it was from earlier in the year and then later on. I mean, that's a pretty solid list. I think that's more than five. Yeah. So
listen,
yeah.
Your list doesn't have to be any way.
No,
your list is great.
I mean, it's this way. yeah.
Don't when I
No. But there are definitely a few that I meant to watch and just didn't get to, like Chernobyl.
I know. That's what I was like pumped to watch.
Yeah.
Kind of got HBO to watch it.
Yeah.
And then have not watched
yeah, exactly.
It. I'm just like, it's hard to like want to be in the mood to watch like a terrible disaster.
Right.
That
yeah.
Could have been avoided.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry, Russia.
And I guess the Witcher is from this year, so that one.
It came out. It came out in 2019.
Oh, it did.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
I think like right before Christmas.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, I haven't gotten around to that. So yeah, there are a few I would have liked to have watched, but I don't really think I watched anyone that I didn't like. Or movies for that matter. I mean,
what about Hellraiser?
I was just about to say, we didn't watch Hellraiser.
What about Hellraiser, bro? Which, again, I liked, but
it's hard for me to not like that movie just because I had a lot of, you know, we're definitely watching it from the outside, if that makes any sense. Like, we know too much about movies, and it's old movie, yeah, and it's campy, and you're not watching it. It's hard to watch it and just be like, oh my gosh, like, this, all this stuff is actually happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're watching it very objectively.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, this is a really cool thing for the time that it came out. You know, yeah, everything is from
it's a
that.
Little condescending.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, that good for them.
Yeah.
Very cute how they thought of that.
Well, so honestly, we watched this movie during kind of like Halloween time because I was trying to watch lots of horror movies, and Hellraiser is kind of a classic, according to a lot of lists, and you know, being from the 80s, and so we checked it out, and I got a lot of enjoyment out of it. But yes,
I had a good time. Yeah,
yeah. It's dated. There's strange things about it. There's bad acting. There's dumb decisions. It's kind of a lot of staples of just kind of a, you know, low budget B movie. But again, like with horror, there's so much to the genre that there's different parts. Like, it doesn't matter if something's not scary necessarily, you can still, there's still things about horror that can, pun intended, bleed through in a good way. And so that was the case in this film, where a lot of the prosthetics and gore was really creative and cool, and the ideas, and but and Noah's wife joined us too, not necessarily I mean, I think we warned her to what she was getting into, but still, I don't know if she was fully prepared for like the level of cringy sex stuff with gore stuff. I mean, with
there are
just
plenty of moments where they're like, why would they think that that's a good decision to make? You know, and like a lot of parts that we like laughed out loud, even though they weren't meant to be funny. I think afterwards she was like, that's probably the worst movie I've ever seen.
Which I was like, I'm so sorry.
I was very impressed that she stuck it out for the whole movie.
Yeah, but I kept like looking over being like, dang, Julia's still here. Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah. Which she walked out of The Last Jedi, so that should tell
show you something. Horror wins.
Hellraiser is better than The Last Jedi.
I mean, I'll tell you, I'd rather watch Hellraiser than The Last Jedi. That's just me. Oh, I know, really? You have a soft spot.
Yeah,
you're a Star Wars boy.
That's right. I'm a space boy.
That's right.
Yeah, that's my list.
Cool, fantastic. Strong list.
Yeah, big strong list.
I don't have a lot for books. I just have one, actually. I did read more, and there's things that I enjoyed reading. Mm-hmm. But I was like, again, we have lots of stuff to talk about. So I was like, I'll just keep it short. And so the one, this did not come out in 2019, which will be obvious to most of you when I say the title, but that was Pet Sematary.
The Bible. Oh.
Yes. Man, I've been... God hasn't dropped the Bible 2 yet, and I've just been waiting
just
for it.
Just waiting for a sequel, that way I can binge read.
That's right. I don't know who's going to get it, Netflix, or if God's going to create his own streaming platform.
He already has one. It's called Pure Flix, and it's regular movies edited down to be G-rated.
I remember Pure Flix.
Yeah.
I never used it, so I'm a bad boy. So Pet Sematary. I really wanted this year to read more Stephen King.
Oh yeah.
And so I renewed my Audible subscription. I was like, I'm not gonna get to things as much as I want to if I don't. So I renewed that, and yeah, Pet Sematary. While it has like some problems that annoy me, like in terms of structure and the overall story, there's so many passages that are just so beautiful. And there's so many scenes that I think about from that book, and again, kind of constitute why I love the genre. And to your point about Parasite, I think that's when things work the best in horror, is when the scary stuff doesn't come for a while.
Yeah.
Because you have so much time to know the characters.
Yes.
And so I think Pet Sematary has one of the most beautiful passages about fatherhood, where it's just the main character and his son flying a kite.
Mm.
And the dad's just in his brain going, oh my gosh, like, I love this kid so much. He's, look at him with the kite. Like, and he's just like obsessed with how perfect this day is and how much he loves his little boy. And I found it so beautiful. And then the creepy stuff, there's like a flashback where a character, and I love when in stories, characters can just tell you a story.
Yeah.
And you're like so invested. And so obviously that happens more in books because you're just reading. So you're always not seeing visually. But in movies, when a character can just like, it's just the character's face and they just tell you a story.
Uh-huh.
And you see it and you're like so into it. I love that. And yeah, in Pet Sematary. So when tells a flashback basically, and that story is just so creepy and interesting, and I think about it all the time. So yeah, I've read, you know, more books of Stephen King since then, and they've been enjoyable, but Pet Sematary, I was just like, this is why Stephen King is Stephen King, because he takes his time. He really invests in the world, sometimes too much, where I'm like, I don't need to know the street name.
Yes.
I don't care what the mailbox number is. Yeah. It takes me 10 minutes to think of a name because, like we've talked about before, I'm like, the name has to have meaning. I have to, whatever. Uh-huh. Stinky is like, here's this person's cousin who knew this guy who watched this show.
Right.
Anyway, Pet Sematary was very enjoyable for me.
What and about, you didn't like the movie, right?
No. Ugh.
Yeah. Okay.
Is it clear that I didn't like the movie?
Yeah.
What about you for books? Friend?
Is that your full list? Is Pet Sematary?
Yeah, again, okay. I was like, I could put other ones, but we've got other stuff to get through, and Pet Sematary was the only one that I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah. So for me, this was hard to read. I had to go on my Goodreads because, again, same thing. A lot of them were at the beginning of the year, and then I didn't read anything like the second half of the year, which was sad because I didn't meet my reading challenge goal.
Nerd.
You
want an apple? Nerd.
But I went through different phases earlier in the year. So I started out the year with true crime. Mm. So In Cold Blood was amazing. There's a book called Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yes, I want to read that.
That's very, very good. Amazing, like, investigative journalism. Devil in the White City.
Yes.
Very, very good. And then I had a couple on the Golden State Killer because I was kind of there was like new stuff coming up. And so I read the Patton Oswalt's wife.
I was about to ask if that was
Michelle McNamara. Yeah. Nice. I'll Be Gone in the Dark. And then there was an Audible exclusive book called Evil Has a Name. And that was when they found out who the guy actually was.
Oh, okay.
And they released that, and it's narrated by, the detective who did the work in discovering who it was. So it's very interesting.
Can I ask a quick, serious question that's going to sound like a joke in reference to that?
Sure.
Do you think the detective had to try out? Like, what if, like, his voice or...
What if he sounded dumb?
Yeah.
I think he did enough interviews and stuff like that to where they're like, oh, like, he should be the one to do it. Okay. I don't know whose idea it was to make it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Audible or Amazon or whoever, you know, went up to him and like, hey, would you be interested in making this into this? And you could read it out. Or if he had written the material and wanted to perform it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but
yeah. I just imagine it'd be really funny. They were like, hey, we got the detective to come in. And he, you know, strolls in and he's like, it was a dick day when
we were so scared.
Oh, and they're like, let's run, give him some, can someone give him cigarettes or something?
Right.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, cool. So I did true crime and then went into fantasy.
Yeah, you did.
Which by fantasy, I mean
50 Shades of Grey.
Exclusively Brandon Sanderson.
Nice.
Of which the standouts were the Mistborn series. The first three books of Mistborn were very, very good. He's known for his world building and magic systems and stuff like that. And I understood why when I read all of that. I was like, man, he can, like, his imagination is very expansive. He can just dream worlds that are amazing. I read The Way of Kings, which was from another series of his. And I'm conflicted about this one because I went into it thinking it would be amazing because that's what everyone says about it. And it's supposed to be one of the most amazing fantasy books and all that stuff. And I really enjoyed it. But I couldn't shake that feeling. I was like, it was fine. Like, I had a really good time. And I wish that people hadn't said, oh, it's the most amazing book you'll ever read. Mm. I think that kind of dulled it for me. And I think I probably need to read it again because I think my mindset for certain plot points was incorrect, or just at the time I wasn't receptive to them. So I might explore that one again.
Well, I applaud you having an original opinion. I mean, that goes back to what I was saying, or that it's like, it's encouraging to me when it's like you're able to, not that like being different is good,
yeah,
but it's nice to know like that you have your own sense of taste when you can either experience something really popular and be like, oh, like that was good, but I don't necessarily agree with the hype, or again, something bad and think, oh, this is actually good.
So yeah.
I trust you more is what I'm trying to say.
That almost happened to me with Inception because I saw it after everyone else. I saw it pretty late and people kept telling me, like, when you're in high school, people over, like, it's just everything's overblown. Everything's the worst ever, the best ever, you know, all these things. And people, I just kept hearing everywhere, Inception, oh, it's the most amazing movie in the world. Oh, my God, it's so complicated. You won't even understand any of it, but it's amazing. And I was just like, I got so sick of hearing about Inception that I almost didn't want to see it. And I watched it, and I thought it was amazing. But I was angry at people. I'm like, stop trying to ruin things for me. So anyway. And then I... Oh, On Writing, Stephen King.
Dana. Okay, me too.
Yeah. I had a really good time
because
with
you
that.
Read it. I read it.
Yeah. And I thought it was really good. I think A Lot of His Advice is really good too, even though he wrote that in like
a long time ago,
90s.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is stuff like, well, yeah, that works for you, Stephen King. That wouldn't work for anyone else. But, his storytelling is just very good.
Yeah.
Even when he's just telling stories about his life. And so that was just really entertaining to read. And then, I read Blood Meridian again, just cause it's my favorite book. And it was it was the best book I read that year. So
I could just picture, it's like, best book, Noah's read this year, 10-year champion or right. whatever. Like, just keeps,
it's just
because like,
I keep rereading it and it's always the best book that I've read.
I need to do it.
It's not for everyone. I can totally see why someone would not like it, but it's just it does something for me.
I read it at a not good time to read it, like right when I moved to Fayetteville, new crappy apartment, lonely, sad, and then I was like, wow, this book's making me feel lonely.
It's
I think now I'd be a much better place to read it.
It's there's so much despair and violence,
which normally I love.
And there's not a good person in this book, which that's not typically my thing. Like that surprises me that I enjoy it so much. But I think you know, half of why I enjoy it so much is just his writing style. I just think it's unbelievable. But the second part is because you're like, oh my gosh, like this is getting insane. How is this gonna go? Where is this going, you know? And just he weaves the story really well. And he doesn't plan his stories ahead of time. So he's like, oh, I want to write a story about this. So Blood Meridian, I want to write a story about this group of people, which is based on real characters. Forget what the group was called, but they were basically under this captain, and they were basically commissioned by the government to go and hunt Apaches and collect their scalps. And then it turns, I mean, first of all, they were getting paid for the scalps per scalp. And to be a kind of person to go on an expedition like that, you already have to be kind of morally skewed.
Yes.
But it gets to the point, this is kind of a spoiler, but it gets to the point where they don't really care if you're Apache or not. They're just going to collect scalps.
Oh.
And so Mexicans, just anyone who, like, if you take the scalp off at a glance, it'll look close enough.
Oh my gosh.
People from their own crew that get into an argument, one of them shoots the other because he's going to scalp them, collect that. Like,
oh man,
it just gets insane. And just like, there's a lot of strategy involved in how they like get in and out of certain conflicts and stuff like that.
Hmm.
A lot of, you know, kind of psychological and, you know, actual warfare planning, but on a small scale. It's just, yeah, it's really intriguing. But anyway, yeah.
You're messed up.
I know.
Fantastic. Well, yeah. It'll make me want to read it after I finish another Stephen King book that I'm reading right now. I'm doing Dr. Sleep right now. So.
Ooh, cool.
Cool. Is that it for you for books?
That's it, yeah.
Okay. For music, I have two quick ones. The first was Half Moon Run's new album. It's called A Blemish in the Great Light. I really like Half Moon Run. Just very great moody music. It's different, I feel like, than what's popular, but they're popular. So it's kind of fun. And it's just always nice for that to have a band that just has been consistent. So this is their third album.
Yeah.
And I've liked all of them.
Yeah.
And what I saw something that was funny on their Instagram today is that they got a message from a hockey team. And the hockey team was like, hey, a couple of our liberal hipster players are not coming to our big playoffs game because they want to go to your show. So we are wondering if you could cancel your show because we really want to win.
That's hilarious.
Thanks. And so then they did a poll. Should we cancel the show? And it was like people mainly say no. And so they're like, we're gonna play.
That's funny.
So I was like, seems like a bad way to ask of like, hey, our liberal hipster friends are going.
Was it not a joke?
I don't know.
It sounds like a joke. Like a, and that's pretty, I feel like a lot of companies are doing that now. Where like if you're on social media, you know, humor is the way to go.
Gotcha.
Like it's a good PR move to have a good sense of humor. So that's how I would take it. But
no. Maybe. Yeah. They did not get the request.
Yeah, well.
And then my second one you did not like, which made me sad, but I really liked it.
Oh, is it Hobo Johnson.
The Fall of Hobo Johnson.
Yeah.
And that's fine, and that's what's lovely about the universe, is that people, despite what people think, can coexist and like and dislike different things.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, a big fan of Hobo Johnson, and I really liked this album. I, you know, we've had our mental health series. We talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it's just really cool to have, again, popular music talk about in a way that I think is not damaging. Cause I also think that's not good either. When it's just like, let's just wait and being unhealthy and let's even add it to our songs when we don't struggle with it. Like, let's just put stuff in there. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm drinking and, you know, and for him, it's like, because he talks a lot about his, you know, life and how it was like before, his relationship with his father. It's like you can see all the seeds in the album of being very real.
Mm.
And you know that this is a person who has a hard time.
Yeah.
And so I just appreciate the vulnerability. I like the lyrics a lot of times. And I do like the variety in the songs too. Some are just insane and weird.
Yeah.
Others are very sweet, but it's not for everyone. Noah's complaints, I understood. Just like
what and it's, I find it very interesting, and I really like what he's doing. I think his sound is just not something I can get into.
Sure,
but I like the things he talks about. I like the way he talks about them. I like his kind of like, this is me, and then just having a good time on this album, making the sounds that he wants to make, even if it's not, you know, like all the same style and stuff like that. Like, I celebrate that. And I'm happy that it's working for a lot of people. I just, I can get into it.
Yeah. That's it for me for music. Those are the ones that stood out album wise. What about you?
This is kind of overlap. I totally forgot about this. It's kind of hard to categorize, but this I guess would count as a TV show. But Ken Burns documentary, Country Music.
Oh, right.
Was a huge thing for me, like a big awakening. Because I,
yes,
yeah, I was not into country music. There were a few country artists that I really like, that I thought were really good, but as a whole, it was not my thing. And this documentary is like, I think it's 8 episodes. They're 2 hours each.
Nice.
So it's like 16 hours, and it's the full like history of country music, and it just blew my mind. I was just like, where the music comes from, why people sing about the certain things that they sing about, and just all these things. By the end of it, I was just like, I love country music. It's amazing.
That's awesome.
I still don't like the stuff that I didn't like before.
Kind of like poppy country.
Yeah, like, anyway, I think we've talked about this before, but like just kind of that stadium country, like radio. And it's all the same lyrics all the time. Yeah. And it's like there's no variety. It all sounds the same. But the stuff that I've, you know, old, new, that I've, you know, discovered, I love it. So I've been listening to a lot of country since then.
Get it, bro.
But the main standout for me as a songwriter and just storyteller is Kris Kristofferson. Mm. Of all the country I listen to, I think he's still my favorite. And it's funny because he's not the best singer. And that was always something that he was self-conscious about. He didn't like his own voice. Mm. But if you like the music that he makes, his voice is like part of it. And the way he sings is part of it. And you really get into it. It's very endearing. So he was one of the, just for context, people don't really know who he is. He was a pretty big actor back in the 70s. He was in the original version of A Star Is Born.
Oh, okay.
Well, I guess there were like 3 different versions. The version in the 70s with Barbra Streisand.
Okay.
And then Kris Kristofferson played the male lead. But he was also a very amazing songwriter, and he wrote songs for everyone else, basically. And he has a lot of songs that are very famous that were performed by other artists.
Okay.
He has a, like, just a really cool life story, but there's this funny story. Before he knew Johnny Cash, he was trying to get his attention as a songwriter, and he was like, hey, like, I want you to, you know, I want to do stuff with you. And, but Johnny Cash was already huge by that point. And so Kris Kristofferson, having been a pilot in the military, flew a helicopter and landed it in, Johnny Cash's backyard. And that's how they met.
Nice.
And so years later, I mean, they became good friends. And years down the road in the 90s, they formed the Highwaymen with Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings. And so that was like the first country super group, you know, Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson. Anyway, I just got really into like the backstories of everyone and, the song lyrics and the relationships between all the artists, and like everyone knew everyone. And I guess that's the kind of the celebrity world, as everyone's connected in some way, but just so many, crazy stories and just cool artists that I discovered that people had been fans of for decades, you know, but I never gave it a shot. I assumed it wasn't for me. Country music.
Country music.
Yeah.
It is fun to be able to discover new things. Yeah. Like, that's what makes life exciting, that you're like, part of you goes, oh man, like I've been missing out on this for so long, but it's also like, I have so long to discover all this stuff that's existed for a long time. Yeah. Like, we like to think like, oh, there's no good music anymore.
Yeah.
There's so much music that's way before us that we search it out. We can get it.
Well, and I was really excited because that was one of the major genres of music that I think that was like the very last one that I had yet to get into. You know, okay. Like I'd given everything else a shot and you know, found my home and all of the other ones. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, country was the one that was kind of unexplored for me. I was just like, I'll take like the kind of the standouts and that'll be it. But I was really excited. I was like, oh, I love country music. Yes. Now I can claim all, you know, like, because the selfish, like, bragging thing. I'm like, oh, yeah, I listen to everything. So when people ask me, hey, what kind of music do you listen to? I can give the very, very annoying
answer.
You flick
your nose.
Yeah. Very annoying answer of, oh, no, just a little bit of everything.
And then I can pop up and like, he means it.
Yeah, that's right. I need you there with me, Kyle.
That's right. Well, Ken Burns needs to do a series on jazz then, so that you can join my
team.
I
like jazz.
Okay, well, you're kind of mean to jazz. And by mean to jazz, I mean you mean to me.
Well, yeah.
About jazz.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like that. That's the part I don't like. man, that's Ken Burns is on the list of like, I don't have the time, but there's some, I want to watch the Vietnam. I just want to watch everything he does.
Yeah.
I don't have time.
After that, I was kind of on a Ken Burns kick. So I did, I had watched part of the Vietnam one, but it was earlier on, and I got distracted by other things. But I ended up watching the Dust Bowl
one, nice.
Which is very interesting and very eye-opening about that time in American history. But and then the Civil War one was really good. Mm. Oh, and the West, he did one on the Wild West. And a lot of these were because I was really in a Western mood and in my writing and all that stuff. And so I really enjoyed those. Yeah.
Get it. Do it. okay. Yummy. The last. Yes. Oh, okay. I lied. I have I have a game and then I have two YouTube channels.
I can't keep up. I'm all out of.
Okay, cool. You can just react to what I have.
All right.
How prepared I am comes from just like a blankness when I thought about the year. I really went, what did I like?
Right. That was my first thought.
I'm so tired. I don't even know what I experienced. So I looked through IMDb. I looked through my Netflix history. I looked through my Spotify, looked at my PS4.
Uh-huh.
So on that note, I'm trying not to talk about too long, but there was a game called The Forest, which again, came out way earlier on computer and then was released for PS4 in 2018, but I didn't play it until 2019. But this was a survival horror game where you crash on an island, and it has a Minecraft element to it where you can build structures and weapons and all these things in the hopes to survive. But then there's the horror aspect comes from there's these terrible mutants on the island and other creatures.
Yeah.
And you have the main goal of trying to find your son. You're a father who's crashed there. You see your son taken away by this creepy man.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just trying to survive. And the game does nothing to help you. It doesn't tell you what to do.
Right.
And so it really puts you in that mindset, which is what I love, to where it's just that role playing of like, I'm in the woods. All I have is a lighter.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was alone, but then I hear some
giggling
and it just instant terror.
Yeah.
And that's what I really appreciate about the game is just that it's an experience. I don't know if I'll ever play it again. And I'm that with a lot of games because the initial experience is the purest.
Yeah.
And so this game legitimately scared me. And I put myself in the mood. I turn off the lights. I put in headphones and just moments of sprinting through the forest, hearing sounds, hearing the brushing of the leaves, not knowing where you're going.
Uh-huh.
And it was just really rewarding. And then actually the journey to finding your son, there's lots of unexpected developments. And it was just kind of, again, I'm sorry to always talk about horror so much, but that's what I really liked about it is just that it got into that very human, like you'd see things and they would freak me out. Like we talked about, you see this giant crater and it just kind of instills this like awe of like, what is that? I didn't know that that was here. What's down there? Is my son down there? Do I have to go down there? It's scary. I don't want to go down there.
Yeah. It has a it's really good at making you feel dread.
Yes.
And just like, almost an like existential crisis about like, oh my gosh, like this, you feel like you're actually in that situation.
Yeah.
You're like, what am I going to do? And just like the despair of it is pretty, is really good.
Yeah. And it's like you'd be trying to build a fire and it like rains and then you can't cook your food and you're starving and you're shivering. Like you can tell your character's cold.
Yep.
And you have to do something to figure out. And then maybe you finally build a shelter, but then it gets overrun by these creatures. And the last thing I'll say is I've always told people, like what I think is like would be really scary is to see something that's just an unnatural shape or an unnatural size. Like as humans, we go, elephants are big.
Yeah.
We know that.
Yeah.
And they're not really threatening to us. I mean, they can be, but, it's like, to think about when there was dinosaurs and again, maybe we were around when they were, maybe we weren't, I don't care, whatever. But this game does a great job of like, you see something in the distance that's way too big and you can't quite tell what it is, but you hear it and you see it moving and you just go, yuck.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's like with Lost when, you know, with what was in the jungle, you're just like, what is this thing? So fun.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not all jump scares.
No.
Like you can see something in the like the first time I went to explore the island, I made it to a beach and I could just see, I was like on top of the hill, and then I could see the beach in the distance and it kind of stretched out. And then I could see these two little figures just like sprinting on the beach and they had like this weird run. And I was like, oh, this is not good. Like you could tell immediately. I was like, oh, I don't want to meet those people.
Yeah.
And so I just went back into the forest and just,
And with that too, like the behavior of the enemies is really interesting to where like, I remember being on the beach and I was doing something. All of a sudden I heard footsteps like running.
Uh-huh.
So I whipped around and I see these two like little creatures. And I freak out and I run towards them and they run backwards.
Yeah.
And I can't get to them because they keep running away, but then they'll stop and they'll just watch me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I don't like that. So I'm throwing rocks at them and I'm actually screaming, get out of here. Leave me alone. And then turn around and I hear them coming towards me and I turn around and I'm like, stop. It was very well designed. It was a great game. I enjoyed it.
Cool.
My last two things, and the only reason I didn't feel like I needed to make YouTube be a category, but these two.
I do have games as well.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I just remembered.
You lied to me.
I'll make these quick.
Hey, take your time.
Sekiro was very good.
Can you tell us what that is?
Yes. So if it's a role-playing game. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of the Dark Souls games. Made by the same people. It's basically kind of an extension of those games, but just in a different universe. It's set in, you know, Japanese samurai culture and all that stuff, which I love. It's a very beautiful game and very fun gameplay. So that was very good. The Outer Worlds.
Yeah.
Very, very fun. It combined a lot of the elements of games that I really like into one game, the Mass Effect games, Fallout games, a little bit of Borderlands.
Mm-hmm.
And so just the writing I thought was really good, which is not typical of an open world game like this. Mm-hmm. Usually it's kind of canned dialogue. Like, it's not that interesting.
I used to be an adventure like you.
That's right.
Until an arrow to the knee.
Yeah. But just really fun dialogue and stories and decision making and stuff like that. So very good. And then Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah, Space Boy.
Yeah, Space Boy. That's right. Had to do it. Again, this is one that I didn't have any expectations going into. I love Star Wars, so I knew I would have fun with it. I was like, oh, I get to play as a Jedi. That's all I need. then I realized as I was playing the game, I was like, oh, you get to customize your lightsaber. I was like, oh no, this is all I need in the world. That's all I've been wanting. And then you can like travel from one planet to the next. So I was like, oh, this is perfect. I've been wanting this game for so
long.
Yeah. It just like, if it checks so many boxes that I've been wanting from a Star Wars game for many years. So, and on top of that, the story was really fun. Characters were really fun. So yeah, those were my three games.
Cool. Fantastic. Right. I like the Outer Worlds as well.
Yes.
Haven't beaten it yet. I know. Just too many things. Yeah. Ken Burns. No.
And then you like went back to The Witcher and
I've been a media slut. So with the YouTube channels, the only reason I feel like I wanted to mention them is just they both really were quite comforting to me in 2019. Is there's like
ASMR.
Sometimes you don't want to watch a show. What'd you say?
ASMR.
Yes.
YouTube channel.
Yeah. Girl chewing popcorn really helped me out.
No. Wrestling plastic bag.
Yes. These I just like watched so much while I was like, when I was like really tired and I just got off work and like have a meal.
Yeah.
And so there's this animated series called Duralius and Associates, which is just kind of like this group of adventurers going on adventures. And it's, you can tell it's just kind of skit comedy, a bunch of friends in a room and then them animating it. And it just is, it's so funny to where they have these great running jokes. And they also poke fun at like other fantasy movies. So you have people quoting stuff. Like you have this really weak character who has the sword and is like, is there no one else? Or are you not entertained? Like they do lots of fun stuff like that. And it's just, it's very funny. Again, I found it like more funny than a lot of movies. I just was like, this writing, this group, their voices, it's not animated very well. And that kind of adds to the charm. And so I just loved that. I love sharing it with my friends.
Yeah, clearly
I told you about
obviously
it.
Heard
I told you about it.
No.
I told you about it.
No,
I told you about it.
No,
I didn't send it to you. But I told you about it. and then the next one was the YouTube channel Pretty Much It, which does movie commentaries. And they do like highlight reels on YouTube.
Oh, that's cool.
And that one too, just I found the two guys very funny and charming. And I just looked forward like every week to like watching their videos. And him and his sister do like Olsen twin movies together.
Oh, really?
And it's fun because they've seen them as kids. They watched them together as kids. So it's fun to like see them like remember things and be excited, but then also have a modern like adult view of it. And I just really, really liked that channel. So
nice.
Yeah. Let's wrap up just with some quick things. Let's just go to the bad really quick.
All right.
And for me, that is not getting the Chick-fil-A sponsorship. We tried real hard.
That was a big one.
I talked about their freaking app every time, and they don't even give me a day's notice.
Yeah.
Which was offensive.
Yeah. Pretty rude.
So that sucked. You and I both having car issues. My car, speaking of Chick-fil-A, was in the Chick-fil-A parking lot for the pickup. And just steam started coming out of my car.
That's good though.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah. Too much steam.
Yeah. Oh, no, I mean, that's fine.
Oh, okay. Well, you want to switch? My car is better than yours, I guess.
Yeah.
And it was funny because it just shows how humans are stupid because as opposed to being worried about my car, I'm worried about the social anxiety of I'm embarrassed that the person bringing my food is going to see my car.
Yes, absolutely. And anytime that I feel like my car is going to break down and inconvenience anyone else, I'm like, just not here. Like, oh, okay, fine. Break down. If you have to break down, break down.
Yeah.
But not here.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
People will see.
Yeah. There's a scene in the Netflix show Master of None where they're driving in Europe and they get their rental car stuck in a tiny little alleyway. And it was like, that's my nightmare.
Yeah.
It stressed me out so much.
That happened to me in Paris.
It did?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I couldn't drive stick at the time. I'd never done it. And I was staying at my aunt's apartment. And she was like, we're, you know, going to leave for the weekend, but we're going to leave our car here. They had this little Fiat 500 stick shift. And she was like, you just drive it whenever you want. If you want to go anywhere, it's yours to use. I was like, great. That's super nice. And they lived in an apartment at the time. And I go downstairs and go and, well, first of all, I spent about 10 minutes trying to get into the wrong car because apparently the person who owns the building has the exact same car. And when I told her about it afterwards, she was like, oh, I am so glad he didn't see you because he's a very mean person. I was like, oh, good. But when I finally found the car, it was parked on the street and I was like, this will be easy. I can figure it out. Again, the car, start driving. I'm like, oh, it's a little rough start, but I got it going. I'm good. Once I get it going, I'm fine. And then made it to some streets. I was like, okay, as long as I don't stop, I'm good. So I just try not to stop. And then eventually got into this one-way street with just cars parked on either side. It's like a car's width, basically. And then I break down because I had to stop and then I couldn't get it going again. And just these cars start lining up behind me and they're waiting and it's Paris life and they're in a hurry. And then the horns start to go and there's like a big delivery truck that pulls behind them. And I was just like, I can't deal with this. And then eventually I just like get it going and I just like book it home. And then I had to have someone help me park the car. This guy watched me struggle to park the car for about 10 minutes. He was like, and I knew that he was watching me the entire time. He was just smoking.
That makes it worse.
He's just on the corner of the street, just smoking a cigarette, just watching me.
Of course he was.
And I'm like, he's like holding his baguette. And I get out of the car. I'm like, would you mind doing this for me? And please don't drive off with the car. I wouldn't be able to stop you. And he was very nice and he parked it for me. And so anyway, that is a real nightmare. Yes.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I think I got an ulcer.
I know. Just the anxiety is just,
The last thing for bad, and I'm glad that I've moved past this, but at the time it was a real stinker and it was just Game of Thrones. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
It just, it's so disappointing.
Yes.
I don't care anymore. I'm done. But I was thinking about like, what was just like bleh, in terms of content? And I just was like, yeah, that wasn't great.
Yeah. Well,
for me,
the hard part for me is the hardest part is not that it was bad. The hardest part I think for me was that I stopped caring whether or not it was good about halfway through that season. I was like, it doesn't matter. Whatever happens, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm not going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Which is a horrible place to be in. Like, I wish I had at least a feeling of anticipation and excitement that came with the previous seasons and then gotten disappointed.
Yeah.
But I was already checked out and like the signs of decline were there and it's just like, it's just a bummer.
Yeah. R.I.P.
Yeah.
That's just like with any... If they do their prequels or anything, I'm just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
For people who don't keep track of this stuff, the two creators and showrunners for Game of Thrones, which had a famously bad last season, turns out it was because they were pretty much checked out by the time that season came around because they'd already gotten a contract to do their own Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah.
And so they just kind of let go and just like, let's just wrap it up in a way that we feel like will be fine and then that'll be it. Not listening to any, fan feedback.
Yeah.
Not listening to what anyone wanted. They thought that fans wanting something and then them giving them the opposite was a good way to keep things exciting.
Yeah.
Subvert expectations, I think is the phrase that they use.
Yeah, which is
and everyone was like, no, stop. We've made it very clear what we want and we'll be very happy if we get it.
Yeah.
But you're doing the opposite. So anyway, so they got the contract to do three Star Wars movies and then they get into, you know, the production phase for those, and they're so end up being so difficult to work with that Disney's like, eh, no, you're not getting it. And so they get fired from the job, and now, like, we had a bad last season finale of Game of Thrones for nothing, and it's just like, oh, salt in the wound. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2019.
No, that was a bummer.
Anything else bad for you, Noah, before we end with some positive, quick positivity?
Yeah, I'll throw this one in. It's gonna bleed into the positive as well. But I made it a goal of mine to write a novel last year.
Yeah, you did.
Which is smart because I had nothing else going on, and I was doing really well at first. I was very excited. Because I'd never written anything before. So, you know, it's a reasonable goal to be like, I'm going to write a fantasy Western epic.
Yes.
In, you know,
go big
months.
Or go home.
Yeah, exactly. Needless to say, I didn't meet my goals. I got set back pretty far. And I think I had 1,000 words a day word goal, mm-hmm. word count goal, which would have, you know, let me get, I think 150,000 by November, December from the point that I'd started. That's how I kind of spread it out, which would have been a pretty thick book and would have been complete, but it just didn't happen. And I think one of the reasons was really hard was that all the inspiration was there, all the, you know, the whole story, I knew what my next chapter was going to be. Like, I had everything. I just couldn't find the time to just sit down and do it. And the times where I had time, I was just tired, wanted to do something else. And I kept thinking of something else I'd rather do. And that was difficult to deal with because I was like, I really want to do it. And I love writing and I've really enjoyed it so far. And I was making good progress. And then it just ended up not happening. So I'll just keep chugging along whenever I have time, and it's still just as fun, but I wish that I'd stuck with it.
Our own, what am I saying? What we put on ourselves and how we fail to ourselves is the worst. Like, what our people see is like good of like, oh, Noah started doing this and it's cool. But I totally understand that. Cause I mean, we all set our own goals. We all have our own expectations. And so we're our worst critics. And so when we don't meet it, it can really just be a bummer. Because you know what you want to do. And you know that at some points you're the one in the way. Other times there's things outside your control. And you're just like,
And it's just so hard knowing that it's possible too.
Yeah.
That makes it harder. Because you're just like, oh, I could have done this. And it just didn't do it. And I read something that was kind of motivational the other day where someone was saying they had gotten to the point where they were like in their 30s and they never had gotten their doctorate like they had wanted to. And that was like that had been a big goal of theirs, and then just too many years had gone by. Or it was something like if they started their doctorate right now, then they would be like 36 by the time it was done. And they were like, yeah, and then I'll be super old. And then that person's mom talked to them. They're like, well, would you rather be 36 and a doctor or 36 and not having done that?
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, well, yeah, obviously. Like, and then you're like, it puts it into perspective. It's just like, well, obviously, you know, there's opportunity cost and there's actual, you know, monetary costs and all that stuff. And then you're sacrificing a lot of years in that specific situation where your time is just dedicated to that. But it was just really nice to, you know, read that and be like, oh, yeah, I would rather make it to that. Like, I'm going to make sacrifices along the way, but I'd rather do it later than never. And then I'm like, it's gonna happen when it happens, and then I'll be happy that it's done rather than just being like, eh, it's never gonna happen, and then just not doing it. So anyway, I thought that was nice.
Yeah, and 36 is not old at all.
No, it's not. Yeah, yeah.
Silly them.
Yeah.
So yeah, yeah. No, that's encouraging to me too. I have the thought of like, again, like you kind of have to know yourself and be like, am I being lazy or is this just like life circumstance right now? And even the other day I went to a friend and I was like, so I have this other thing I want to do and I want you to talk me out of it. And so I like told them about it and they're like, yeah, it sounds cool. But like you said, I don't know where you would find the time to do that and other things would suffer. And I was like, that's good to know. Like yeah. right now it's not realistic, but it's the other person and myself wasn't shutting it down. And so it's like, yeah, we both have plenty of time to do these other things. Mm-hmm. And it's not bad for them to come later. And I'm always encouraged when you see like at what age certain famous people accomplished what they wanted. And a lot of times it's not very young.
Yeah.
What we consider young. It's like in their 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever. And so anyway, I'm just going to quickly say good because it's getting late and my phone's dying and I'm tired.
So is mine.
I know. It was awesome to last year celebrate having done Humming Fools for a year. Yeah. And now with this episode having 52 episodes, I guess 53. We always do that. I'm going to try to stop doing that because it's always episode zero. So I'm like, technically it's this number, but anyway, 53 episodes in total. Again, that's just awesome. Yeah. And so thank you, Noah. Thank you, listeners. Mm-hmm. It's just really cool to, again, have the affirmation of we stuck with something. Like we could have had the same attitude of all the work to do the podcast and then we're going to start off not with the gear we want and whatever. But then we would not have any of our work. And so now it's like, it took a year and whatever, but we now have 53 episodes and we know all this stuff and we've met people. And so that's just been really cool.
Yeah.
And then the most recent, which I guess it didn't come out in 2019, but us working on Evilcast was really fun. Yep. And, you know, electronically meeting the artist for it, Enrico, and then getting to eventually publish it was really cool. So again, publishing wasn't a 2019, but I'm just going to cheat.
Yeah, that's fine.
Our podcast. We do whatever we want. The podcast police aren't going to burst in and be like, hey, we can't burst in because we're only through the audio, but we're in your ears. But no, doing Evilcast is really cool. Yeah. If you haven't yet, please check it out. It's on our website. It's our new dark comedy adventure horror podcast, all the words. We love it.
Comic.
Yes.
You ended with podcast, which would be confusing to
I'm
some
tired.
People.
Yeah, sorry, it's a comic.
Yeah.
It's a comic. This is a podcast.
Yes.
And Evilcast is a comic.
Yeah.
One more time.
One more time.
Humming Fools is a podcast. Right. Evilcast is a comic.
About a podcast.
About a podcast. It really is the
called Evilcast.
Yes.
So Evilcast.
Oh, it's all a loop. It's all connected, man.
All right. Good night.
All right. Cool. Noah?
Kyle?
You're great. I love you.
Ooh.
I hope you have a good night. Listeners, subscribe. Look at our Instagram. Look at our website, newsletter. It's all in the show notes. And look for the show notes for all our list. And last thing, if you want, tell us what you liked of 2019.
Yes.
Recommend us stuff.
Yes.
Always looking for new content. That's it. Bye, Noah. Let's get some sleep.
Yeah. Good night.